Everyone is hyper aware of problems, and very few people have any idea what to do with them. Everywhere you look, there's this problem, there's this problem, there's this problem, there's this problem. How do I solve this? 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 No one knows how to solve it, and so you just get stuck doing absolutely nothing. The best way to feel better about a problem is to... What we're going to do is just ask y'all, like, what part of the world feels like a mess to you? What are y'all dealing with? What's falling apart in your life? And on Slido, basically, people can post a particular topic or question or whatever, and y'all can upvote it. And then based on what floats to the top, what I'm going to try to do is take what I know about psychiatry, neuroscience, psychology, spirituality, helping people through coaching, like whatever. So basically, I'm going to do my best to offer some degree of guidance or help or framework to try to tackle whatever problems feel like they're the whatever y'all are dealing with that's falling apart. Maybe we can figure out together like how to deal with the world kind of being on fire a little bit, right? Living in a tropical country is an everyday struggle because of the heat. It really sucks that climate change feels like an unwinnable battle. And this is real, y'all. I mean, I know there are people who deny that climate change is a thing, or they think that there are natural variations in the climate that are not based on man-made stuff. My understanding is that the lion's share of scientific evidence suggests that climate change is real and that human beings are affecting the environment. That's my understanding of the evidence. I do think there are a lot of valid arguments against climate change. So I think one of the most interesting things about climate change is that we can't run an experiment. So when we make us, when we really prove something in science, it is hypothesis, experiment, data collection, analysis, conclusion. So there are some parts of the scientific method that it's very hard to apply to climate change models. So I think that's like an example of like one of the better arguments against a definitive understanding of climate change, but at the same time, I think there's been a lot of people who understand climate science who basically say that this is happening, and that's what I generally believe. Now, this is the hard thing, right? So if you're living in a situation that is affected by climate, that is a very real thing that is going on. It's something I've thought a lot about in terms of like, where do I want to spend the next 20 to 30 years of my life? Are we going to have problems with water? So I live in Texas, and like, is Texas going to become increasingly unlivable over the next 20 to 30 years? It's something I've seriously wondered. So do I want to move further up north? Do we want to go to like Montana or something? Like, who knows? Right? We see all these wildfires in California and stuff like that. Like Pacific Palisades fire was really scary. So these are very real issues. And I think you have to survive, adapt, and ideally excel in these environments. So there is a mental health crisis. This is a problem. There is a loneliness epidemic. This is a problem. And problems is also what drives solutions and what drives exceptionality, right? Necessity is the mother of invention. So as we see the world is getting worse, we are called to be exceptional. We are called to be the solution that the world needs. So is it hard for you to live and exist on a daily basis? Absolutely. I totally get that. And if climate change is a thing and there are some parts of the world that are increasingly and unbearably hot, and you are the person who figures out how to solve that problem, how to improve that problem, right? Whether you're cleaning up the Great Pacific Garbage Patch in the ocean, or you're developing desalination technology, or you recognize that mental health is a mess, wait times are really long, therapy seems to be insufficient for a lot of people, seems inaccessible to a lot of people, let's fill that gap. So I think now is the time when the world is falling apart is when people who are innovators and people who try to fix problems, we become the most important. And I say we as in me and all of y'all. So I think our community is very capable, very intelligent. We tend to get in our own way. We tend to have mental health struggles and things like that. But like, we are exceptional. Oftentimes we're twice exceptional. We have one thing on the bell curve that's really bad. Maybe we have crippling depression. Maybe we're really lonely, but our IQ is very high. Changing your life isn't easy. When I was flunking out of college, I had to travel all the way to an ashram in India to begin a 7-year journey to put my life back together. Unfortunately, that option isn't available to everyone. That's why I've taken most of what I've learned, distilled it into the most important points, not just from India, but also my years of training as a psychiatrist, into our coaching program. Coaches will help you set appropriate goals, maintain motivation, and hold you accountable. Thousands of people from all over the world have tried HE coaching and have seen sustained improvements in purpose and direction in life, and even reductions in feelings of depression and anxiety. So if you're interested in putting your life together but don't have 7 years to wander around India, definitely check out HE coaching. Right. So this is the kind of thing where I would encourage you to do two things. First is, how are you going to adapt? And does adaptation mean moving somewhere else? And really putting a plan in place to improve your life. Where can I emigrate to? My parents emigrated to the U.S. because there was a better life here. They chose to leave their systemic circumstances, work really hard. It was a mess for them for a long time. It was hard. Emigration is hard. And they managed to make a really good move. So should you leave? Absolutely consider it. And the second big thing is, if there's a huge problem, how can we fix that problem, right? Is this about developing some kind of new technology? Is it about installing fans? Is it learning how to build more like architecturally like coolant houses, right? There are all kinds of ways that people used to like refrigerate things in the desert using basic understanding of physics. So are there principles of architecture and refrigeration that you could start to employ in your environment to make things more livable, right? So crisis, the Japanese kanji, Chinese character for crisis, involves two things: danger plus opportunity. In the world that we're living right now, we are in a crisis, which means there's a lot of danger and there's a lot of opportunity, right? Uber and Lyft came along because the taxi industry sucked. Airbnb and VRBO came along because hotels were getting ridiculous. Now Airbnb is getting ridiculous. So this is where, like, don't underestimate what you're really capable of in terms of innovation, in terms of change. And the world needs you, right? We need these kinds of solutions. So at a minimum, adapt, figure out what's best for you. And on the top end, don't undersell if there's a huge problem in your life and you solve it for yourself. You have a pathway towards entrepreneurship right there. Because if it worked for you, there's a decent chance it'll work for somebody else. And if it's a systemic problem that is affecting you, it's a systemic problem that is affecting other people. So I think there's a lot of stuff here where, like, I know it's hard, and there's also a lot of opportunity. The problem is that we tend to get so bogged down in our own heads that we don't see that opportunity. We are just suffering. We're burnt out. We're depressed. We're exhausted. It's hard to get out of bed. And so we can't bring ourselves to become what we're truly capable of and what the world needs. So it starts with you fixing yourself, because whatever you want to accomplish in life, you have to use this instrument, right? You inhabit this body and this mind. The more you strengthen those, the more you improve those, the more you will be capable of. It's really hard to chop wood with a blunt axe. So start by sharpening, and then you'll be amazed at what you're truly capable of. And I've seen this time and time again, people who struggle with addiction for like a decade, who then put their lives together in the span of 4 years, which is still a long time. They can really go from like zero to doing really well, financially stable, in a healthy relationship, bought a house, right? They still have a big note on their mortgage, but like, it's amazing what you can accomplish in 4 years. Job market and economy situations both look very tense and depressing. Absolutely. The economy of the world seems to be in the first stages of getting on the struggle bus. I think the job market has gotten really problematic for a few reasons. The first is that there's some kind of like scale problem with jobs, which has really turned into something that it wasn't supposed to be. So somewhere along the way, we started applying to jobs on the internet. And when we started applying to jobs on the internet, at the very beginning, the scale of the internet was a good thing. Now I'm some guy, I used to have to walk around down the street. Like, I remember when I got my first job, I would literally go to a shopping plaza and I would go door to door and I would drop off a paper copy of my resume. I would ask my friends and family, hey, do you know anyone who's looking for a job? So the pool of competition was small and the availability was also small, but somehow that evened out. Something about 20 jobs available and 20 people looking for jobs, even though it was a pain in the ass to find them, that was manageable. Then Monster.com came along, LinkedIn came along, and then suddenly you can apply to jobs anywhere, which is actually really cool in a lot of ways. So we're like a remote company. You know, we have people that work with us that are in Canada, that are in India, that are in Jamaica. Like, that's super cool. Like, super cool. And what also started happening is that you used to have to apply to 20 jobs. Like, so back in the day when I was trying to become a research assistant, I applied to 120 to 140 jobs. And that was a lot back then. This was like 2006. And now it's like people will apply to 100 jobs a day. Like, that was some gigantic achievement. And some of y'all are grinding out thousands of jobs. So now the question becomes, if the economy is like scary and the job market is depressing, what can you do? Okay, so I'm going to take a little bit of a, I'm going to be blunt with y'all. Most people who work suck. This is my professional experience. Okay. So like the average person, and I know it sounds weird, but like, I want y'all to think about the people that you work with. If you're lucky, they're exceptional and you work in an exceptional place. But like, you go to most places and the people who do their jobs like suck. Like, if you go to the average accountant, they're not actually going to like use every tax strategy to have you avoid paying taxes. They're going to just like go through some stuff, have you fill out some forms. They're going to do some basic level of like tax stuff that you can do on your own. One of my friends who's also an entrepreneur is like really frustrated. He's had really expensive lawyers. He's had really crappy, really cheap lawyers. And what he's found is that irrespective of what happens and who he hires, he has to go through all the contracts himself and make sure they don't miss something. Okay. I've worked with content creators who, you know, will work with companies and stuff like sponsorship deals who don't understand brand, don't understand if this product goes south, how much it actually impacts the content creator. A lot of people out there are just average. They show up, they have some degree of expertise that they apply in a relatively autopilot manner, and then they go home for the day. It's a 9-to-5 for them, right? And for those of y'all that are working, let's be honest. For a lot of us, it's a 9-to-5 for us. I'm just going, it's like kind of a good way for me to make money. It's a way for me to make ends meet. I kind of like the work, but I'm not showing up every day really trying to do the best, right? So when I go get a sandwich from someplace like McDonald's or whatever, right? The person who's making that sandwich is not like, and this pisses me off, but whatever, right? So like what they'll do is they won't like spread the mayo on the sandwich, right? They'll just put some glob, sprinkle some lettuce, and then they'll give me the sandwich. And it's some poorly distributed sandwich. And I hate that. But hey, they're getting paid minimum wage. It's McDonald's. What do I expect, right? Like, can I really expect this person to spend the next 5 seconds of their life spreading the mayo evenly on the sandwich? Is that fair for me to expect? Let's be honest. No, it isn't. This guy's not, I mean, can they do it? Does it cost them anything? I don't really think so. But like, fine, it's McDonald's. Who am I to judge? So whatever. So when I go there, I don't get upset with them. Like, I don't know what their life is like. Maybe their life is hard. Maybe they don't have the energy. I'm pretty privileged. Like, I get to do this for my work and this is awesome. So whatever. And at the same time, if you really think about it, your competition sucks. Think about a video game. Like, 60% of people are like silver. And that's what real life is like too. Most people suck. And that's why the world is the way it is. Like, let's be honest. Right? People like half-ass things. They collect paychecks. It's 9-to-5. And I'm not saying that it's their fault. People are burnt out. People are depressed. There's no upward mobility, right? That's why I don't blame the person who's at McDonald's and doesn't spread the mayo. Y'all with me? I don't blame them. I'm not saying that they're bad. What I'm saying is that if you really look at it, most people don't work very hard. One of my favorite quotes from Office Space, you guys have seen the movie, is most people work just hard enough to not get fired, right? So here's the really cool thing. If we look at the world, we see that the wealth gap is increasing. And the wealth gap is increasing because part of the problem is that the people with the money are writing the laws. Fair enough. But what I've also found is that irrespective of how the system is all messed up, there are some people who start to be like pretty good at stuff. And if you're pretty good at stuff, you know, so this is really wild. When I was a second year resident at Harvard Medical School, I asked my program director, you know, what do you think is like the most important thing that we need to learn? And she said, the most important thing that we need to, y'all need to learn is how to say no. And I was like, what do you mean by that? And she's like, you have to learn how to say no to opportunities. Because everyone's going to want your help. Everyone wants your help writing a book chapter or working in their lab or doing this or doing that. Everyone's got a project and they want your help. You have to learn how to say no to things. And this is what I want y'all to understand. There's like two parts of the world. There's one, and a lot of y'all know this, right? Like people will say this very frequently. But if you stop and think about it, that means that there's one group of people that a lot of people are asking them for help, asking them to work with them, whatever. And one group of people is having to say no a lot. And another group of people is hunting for a single yes. No one is asking them. And there are too many people asking this group and too many people asking this group. This is the reality of the world, okay? I'm not trying to be like mean, but like this is like wild, right? So look at the discrepancy. And so this is the kind of thing where like if y'all are struggling to work and you're worried about it, I'm not saying that things aren't hard. You're going to have to apply to like 1,000 jobs or whatever, like on LinkedIn. The job market is bad. People are like laying things off. I want to show y'all an interesting graphic here in a second, right? So like let's look at like how bad things are. So gaming industry layoffs between January 2023 and January 2024, right? So each dot represents one of the approximately 16,000 people affected. So in 2023 to 2024, these are all the people who got laid off. And I'm not saying that these people are like suck or anything like that. So there's absolutely massive systemic forces. So Overwatch 2 was my passion and my perfect dream job. I'm devastated that my team and I were eliminated despite our importance, right? It's like, wow, you got fragged by Overwatch 2. So there are absolutely situations that are outside of your control. But there are also a lot of things that you can do. And this is where I think there's a change in our culture nowadays of like trying to do the minimum. Of this idea that I'm not going to work extra at all. I'm not going to try to distinguish myself. And there are all these stories that get propagated, right? These are the ones that get upvoted and shared the most about how someone started working way less and they started getting promoted way more. And there's good stuff around that. Like a lot of those kinds of techniques and we try to teach in things like career coaching. That's why we developed career coaching, because there's something called the hidden curriculum. So the hidden curriculum is all of the things that you get judged on at work that no one will ever teach you. And at the top of the hidden curriculum is this scary word. You guys know what the worst word is in the corporate world? That if someone says this about you, you're screwed and there's no way to fix it. If you can be this, you will get promoted. And if you get called this, you will never get promoted. It's professionalism. Professionalism. Right? So how do you be professional, chat? Someone says, oh yeah, this person, you work really hard, but you're not professional. You guys ever think about that? How frustrating that is? And who gets promoted? Not the hard workers, the people who are professional. See, this is exactly what I mean. Y'all don't understand what the fuck this is. It's not conformity. Take off your tinfoil 4chan hat for a second. Right? Like, oh, like, I'm not going to be some conformist. There is absolutely an element of being able to get along with others. There's like social intelligence, which leads to professionalism. So when someone doesn't like you, and when there's something about you that they don't like, and they want to say you're doing something wrong, but it's not your job performance, professionalism is the word that they used. You understand that? What's the problem with my work? I can't find anything wrong with your work, but I don't like you. So I'm going to call you unprofessional. Okay? And then what happens is we get pissed off. We get all of our nuts get twisted and tangled. Our panties get in a bunch, whatever you want to, whatever. I don't know what a non-binary equivalent is of that. Right? And then we get pissed off and then we're like down with professionalism. And it's like, this is the kind of stuff that no one will teach you, but everyone will punish you for. So learn to be professional. And you may say, how do you do that, right? So that's where being professional, we can talk about some of it. I saw one really good answer here. Competence, responsiveness, and ethics is like a great place to start. Love that answer, right? So I think there's a lot of EQ stuff that goes with it. This is why we like, when we work with people like in career coaching, we find that the people just aren't getting promoted, right? And then you work with a career coach, they analyze, they help you understand what are your internal tendencies that cause you to overpromise and underdeliver, or worse, overpromise and deliver. Therefore, when you overpromise and you end up delivering, this becomes the new normal for you. You end up setting unrealistic or unsustainable expectations for yourself. And then what happens is you are a star player for the first 6 months, but then you dropped a couple of balls because you burnt out. And now you're viewed as inconsistent, so you're not going to get promoted. You did everything right, burnt yourself out, and got punished for it. This is the way that things work. Professionalism. And as you develop these skills, you will distinguish yourself from the pack. People will want to advocate for you. Once people realize you are a good person to work with, then you will have to learn how to say no instead of scraping for a yes. Now, what does this look like? If you guys are applying to online jobs, you are a faceless person who is in 1,000 applications that are equally faceless. If you have a really strong application and you're exceptional, you'll rise to the top. In a faceless competition, the best numbers win. So what I'd strongly recommend, and we'll see this, like, so we'll get people who want to work with us, and like, we've got, we work with a ton of people, and you can tell like very quickly, usually, like whether someone is like thoughtful about their job, whether they really try hard, or they're like running a script in their brain. Are they like a bot, or are they like a human who is leveraging their cognitive capability to try to do right by you? And the crazy thing, this is the biggest mistake that people make, is that they think that succeeding at your work means working more. It doesn't mean working more. It just means not being a bot, right? So are you behaving rotely? Are you behaving on autopilot, or are you thoughtful? When you have a task, do you like sit down for 15 to 20 minutes and really think about what is the best way to do this? How can I really do right by this person? If I'm developing a marketing campaign, it's like sitting down and reading the finished product and saying, hey, is this really the best I can make it? How can I do better? And this is the thing that really messes people up, is there are a lot of people who do that, but then have problems on the professionalism side. So they work really hard, but they don't know how to set boundaries. So I was working with a friend of mine is a designer, actually not a freelance designer, but does some consulting work on the side, does some design work on the side. So took a side gig, where the person was like way too demanding. So they closed out the job, and then their client was like, okay, I'd like you to do this next. And they just told him, I don't think so. I think you should find someone else. I think the way what you ask like is too demanding. They're like, yeah, thank you, but no thank you. Find somebody else. So that's incredibly professional. You don't bitch and whine at them in the moment. You don't argue with them. You don't piss them off. You close out the thing. You set some boundaries. You say, here's what I can do. Here's what I can't do. You set some boundaries. And then since you do a good job, they're going to come back. And that's when you say, thank you, no thank you. Right? So I've had to do this with patients where we don't have a good therapeutic interaction, which is fine. That happens. So I'll be like, okay, that's totally fine. I'm happy to try to help. I'm trying to, you know, figure this out with you. Let's try again. You want to try this? I'm happy to try this. And then what'll end up happening is they'll kind of ghost or whatever, and they'll oftentimes leave a big bill behind. And it's like, totally fine. Don't worry about it. If you feel like the last month of our clinical time together has not been useful to you and you don't want to pay your bill, that's fine. Good luck. Here's a referral list. I think if you're interested, I'd call this person for this, good luck. Oftentimes what'll happen is people will call me back and they'll be like, hey, can I come back? And I'll say no. They're like, what if I pay the bill? And it's like, yeah, you can. I mean, if you want to, you can, don't worry about it. But even if you pay the bill, no. So being professional is like not dropping the ball when someone else is doing something wrong, doing your part, being responsive, being communicative, showing up when you're supposed to show up, setting boundaries, fulfilling expectations, being really careful about the expectations that you set, and what is it within you that pushes you to set unrealistic expectations? Do you want to be the hero? Do you want to be loved? Do you want to be promoted? And as you gun for that promotion, I don't know if y'all have ever worked with a gunner who wants to be number one, they end up being quite unprofessional and sometimes don't go very far. Sometimes they go really far. Depends on the environment. So if you're struggling because the economy sucks, like, I understand that is a systemic reality that you deal with. And the good news is that most people are average. And if you want to have an advantage in today's workplace, like, it's like, be better than average. That's the goal. You just need to be at the 51st percentile. And this is where people will say, it's not that easy. It's not like if you wake up on your 51st percentile, suddenly everything happens. So part of that being above average is your networking capability. And here's a quick TLDR about how to network. First thing is, networking usually does not, sometimes happens at networking events, but oftentimes doesn't happen at networking events. I think the most potent networking does not happen at networking events. It happens at other things. That's rule number one. So get involved with something. So there are networking components to things, but like, it doesn't necessarily have to be a networking event. You can start there. It's a good place to start because that's how you practice your social skills. So the crux of networking, the way that I understand it, so most people network to get ahead. You don't network to get ahead. Network to help other people out. So when I learn that, hey, you're really good at this, and I learn that you're really good at this, you don't try to put yourself ahead. This is a big mistake that a lot of people make with networking. It's like, oh, you're really looking for this. Hey, I know a guy. I think I know someone who may be able to help you out. Would you like me to make an introduction? And then what happens is both of those people, and you have to be good at this. You can't just randomly connect people. So you have to kind of vet people. Who's an idiot and who isn't? Who's professional and who isn't? Who's reliable? Who's a big talker? Who's unreliable? What's the vibe that you get? And then you start helping other people out. Networking is about helping other people out. Maybe I'm bad at this. I don't know. Maybe it's just my attitude. But I try to help people out. And it tends to work really well for me. I don't know. People getting less and less empathetic in interactions with each other, people tend to be more self-centered and less community-driven. This is a huge problem. So what we're seeing in the world is that people are becoming more lonely. And the reason that people are becoming lonely is because of two major things that are increasing. One is narcissism. If you use social media or the internet, this has a narcissistic effect on you, right? So we're now all becoming the center of our own universes. The second thing that we're getting really, really bad at is tolerance of discomfort. Our tolerance for other people has gone down, right? We're so quick to blame. We're so quick to dogpile. We're so quick to like hop on. So it was interesting. So we did an interview with Pirate Software. And then, you know, I tried throughout the interview to share with people like, hey, this person is like, you know, they're going through their own thing. They may not understand exactly what their impact is. We're here to try to understand what's going on. And then towards the end of the interview, I said like, look, you know, you don't have to be mean to him. Like, you don't have to do that. Like, you don't have to show up on the internet and say crap to him for a little while and then just disappear, right? Like, you can choose to spend that energy to make the world a better place instead of messing up this person's life. And I'm sure some people think that by messing up this person's life, they're in some way making the world a better place, putting him in his place. So the really interesting thing was someone posted on our subreddit about this, and they're like, you know, there's a lot of stuff on LSF, whatever. But then our own subreddit, thankfully, y'all were like pretty cool about it. And y'all, you know, there can be constructive criticism. Y'all can think he's a narcissist or whatever. Like, that's fine. But like, generally speaking, the way that we approach it is not knee-jerk, not reflexive. There's one comment that really stuck out to me, which is like, yeah, like I'm not, you know, I just show up on the internet, I bash him for 5 minutes and then I disappear. I'm not wasting a whole lot of my time on this. This is just something I do. It doesn't cost me anything. And I was stunned by that response. I was stunned that like someone is like, yeah, it doesn't cost me a whole lot. This is how I get my shits and giggles for the day. I just show up, make someone's life worse, troll people for 5 minutes and I disappear. And like, even if it's not ruining your life, because I was saying like, why are you wasting your time doing this? Go do something productive. They're like, it doesn't cost me very much. It's like, what's going on here? Why is there such a lack of compassion, right? And this is what's happening on the internet, is people show up and just try to make other people's life worse. People are smurfing in video games. People are doing all kinds of crap. So if you're someone who's struggling with this, there are two major things that you need to understand. One is that your ability to tolerate other people's negativity is going to be critical for your ability to connect with other people. Right now, what happens, I don't know if y'all have noticed this, but like, if you look at like relationship advice stuff, someone is like, oh yeah, this person did this, red flag, dump them, move on. You go on one date on a dating app, you talk for a while, you make one comment, you trigger something, I don't know, some massive walls of text where the other person gets pissed at you. And then there's like, done, I'm done with you. I can't believe you would suggest that we go eat barbecue for a date. I can't believe you would suggest that. Don't you know how bad barbecue is for climate change? Oh my God, you're making the world a terrible place. You're a terrible human being. Our ability to tolerate other human beings has gone down. We've stopped trying. So if you can't tolerate another human being's negativity and you don't give them time to grow, then you're going to be lonely. And that's literally what we see with narcissism, right? They don't give anyone else the benefit of the doubt. Now, there's a difference, because a lot of people will tolerate a lot of negativity. They'll be a doormat. So what's the difference between tolerating negativity and being a doormat? The difference is in the trajectory of the other person and their delta over time. So if I can be patient enough and give someone a couple of weeks, a couple of months to improve, are they moving in the right direction? Versus if they're not moving in the right direction and I continue to tolerate negativity, then that's becoming a doormat. That's unhealthy for you. But if you're going to cut ties with someone the first time they exhibit a red flag, newsflash, we're humans, we're screwed up, all of us have red flags. You're going to be in for a bad time. So there's a huge lack of tolerance. There's a growth in narcissism. And so what's starting to happen is people are raw. It doesn't take a whole lot to trigger a Karen. It doesn't take a whole lot to get ghosted on the internet. The other thing that's happening is people are disposable. Human beings have become the most disposable they've ever been. Because there's plenty of y'all, if I block you, there's plenty of other people left. I can always find new people to queue up with, so I can be an asshole. I can get banned from this subreddit and I can go troll something else. So what's happening is, like, from an evolutionary perspective, there is no longer a selection pressure on shitty behavior. See, it used to be that when you lived in a town and you were an asshole, word got around. But now the internet is such a big place where you can mess up this person's life and you can go over here and this person has never heard of this person. There's no internal community. So there's no selection pressure on being a decent human being. So how do we navigate this? So in a world of crappy people who are narcissistic, have no capacity for forgiveness, there are pockets of refugees. And boy, do we love hanging out with each other. Right. So it was really interesting when we started growing a lot, we became a place, our community became a place where echo chambers collided. A lot of women started joining our community. A lot of incels started joining our community at the same time. And what happened is a lot of people didn't stay, which is totally fine. The incels, sometimes they got banned. Sometimes they got unbanned. Sometimes they decided this is not the right fit for me. Women didn't feel safe. They decided to leave. That's fine. But the cool thing is for the people who developed tolerance, for the people who practiced compassion, this became a cool place where incels and women connected around loneliness. Never thought I'd see it. Right? And this even presumes that incels are men, and the original incel, the person who developed the term, was a woman. The OG incels were women. And men came and took it away. So if you can practice tolerance, if you can practice compassion, you will have a unique advantage. Because out of all of the narcissists on the planet, if you give this person some degree of compassion, if you practice some degree of tolerance, you will evoke and awaken a side of them that other people don't access. You can start the process of rehabilitation. And this is one of the sad things about the world, is that no human being feels responsible for another human being's progress. So I see this a lot with, like, women saying, it's not our job to teach men how to be emotionally available. It's not our job to emotionally support them. They need to learn that crap on their own. The problem is that women have been doing this work for us, the work of emotional labor for us, for like generations, right? That's women and men both. I mean, women sort of say that. They say, like, oh, we've been doing this unpaid labor for a long time, which is fair. And so, like, you can't just learn something on your own when someone else has been doing something for you, right? We're left floundering. Someone has to teach it to us. And if you're a woman out there and you're like, it's not my job, fair enough. But then whose job is it? So I think this is where there's another big gap in the world today, where it's not your responsibility, if you're a woman, to help a man teach a man anything. I completely agree. It's your life. You should do what you want with it. It's not your responsibility. And if you don't take up that responsibility, then who's going to? Who's capable? So I think one of the reasons that the world is in the shitty situation that it's in, and this is not just women and male emotional vulnerability, this is the smallest of the problems. The reason the world is the way that it is right now is because there are a ton of people with capability who do not take responsibility. There's so many people out there who have the power to make the world a better place, and they choose not to. And they make the same argument. It's not my responsibility. And I would agree with them. It is not your responsibility. But if you don't do it, who will? Whose responsibility is it? It's society's. So the world has gotten to the situation that it's in because a lot of people who can make a difference choose not to because it's not their job, which is fair. And the moment that human beings start to only do what they are responsible for is the moment that we start to move in this direction. Like in the world, we have an entropic force that will make the world worse. I don't know if this makes sense. Any system that human beings have developed just gets worse over time. Everything. There is a worldwide enshittification by humanity. The Roman Empire was great, and then it got enshittified. Some of these religions and spiritual teachers started out awesome, and then they became problems. These streaming services, oh my God, ad-free. I can watch things whenever I want. They were a boon when they first showed up, and they've just gotten worse ever since then. They were supposed to kill cable, now they've turned into cable, right? So all of the things that initially saved us will gradually get worse. This is just the nature of the world. It's entropy at a societal level. And the only way that we can fight against entropy is with effort. And is it your responsibility? Absolutely not. And the world that we live in will depend on what you choose to do about it. Right. So I think the last thing about people not being empathic and not being community driven is people will say, oh, there's no place to go. There's no community. Right. There's like, and the cool thing is people are like developing solutions to that. Right. There's this really cool thing that's going on in Austin that someone just started. And she was like, she just posted on Twitter or something. Hey, I'm going to show up at this place. I'm going to take a 2-hour walk. And for people who just want to get to know other people and have like a conversation, we're going to take a 2-hour walk every single day. We meet at this time. You can bring your coffee or whatever. It ends at this time. It's not professional networking. It's not dating. It's not for any purpose. It's just to hang out. The thing is, the event has exploded. Tons of like 100 people go now. And then you get to see people. You like meet like all kinds of random people. It's just like walking for the sake of walking. It's so cool. And so this is the kind of thing where I see someone's asking, anyone have a link to this? I'm not going to like mention it publicly because they have a really good thing going and I don't want to flood them with things. But, and this is the kind of thing where it's like, you don't have to have a link to this. You can build one, right? So you can start things like this. There's an appetite for things like this. We try to do this here on the HG side with things like community events where we try to get y'all to move in the right direction. Right. So I recently reached out to someone like literally last night, someone who I've never met. And I was like, bro, we should hang out. We'll see. Maybe the person will respond. Maybe they won't respond. Whatever. So there is a lack of community. And this is where like that's a call to action for y'all. So start to create a community. And you got to be careful because sometimes there's a lot of accessible community, which is not great community. And a great example of this is Discord. So I love Discord. And I think that Discord sometimes prevents us from taking the steps that we really need to take. I have one Discord that I love to hang out in. Our Discord is pretty good, right? Our Discord is a cool place. And it shouldn't end with Discord. There's real life relationships and there's Discord. Even on the Discord that I hang out in, like people will like, they'll meet once a year. They take like a trip together and it's like super cool vibes. Like I love it. But if your primary social interaction is on Discord, you should have something else. And you can make something else. You can join something else. Meetup groups and things like that. These are becoming necessities now. People are realizing we need to be doing this. See, I see this comment and I like it, but I think it's kind of like, so someone's saying it feels fundamentally pointless to engage in such community stuff on some level in the West because of how selfish and atomized society seems to be out here as compared to developing countries. So this is a, I think this is correct, but I think it doesn't serve the purpose. So one of the things that I'll leave y'all with, so if there's one skill that I want y'all to develop, it is to understand the direction that your thoughts put you in. When I have a thought like this, okay, it feels fundamentally pointless to engage in such community stuff on some level in the West because of how selfish and atomized society seems to be out here as compared to developing countries. That is true, but where does that lead you? So what I notice is so hard for people right now is that their mind thinks a lot of things that are true, but moves them in the wrong direction, right? So if I'm working with someone who says, "Hey, no one would ever want to date me because I'm 32, I live with my parents, I've never had a relationship, and I don't have a job." That is correct, probably. But what direction does that move you in? We get so concerned about the truth of our thoughts that we never think about the impact of our thoughts. So there are two ways that you can think. All of these things are true. This can be a roadmap to finding a partner, or it can be a destiny to be alone. I don't have a job. I live with my parents. I've never dated someone. I have no friends. This is your roadmap to a partner, not your destiny to be alone. It's the same thing. So what I've noticed is literally the content of people's minds are in true, unmotivating statements. And y'all understand that distinction? It's so devastating. I work with this all the time when I work with people who are like depressed. Because usually, like, the thing about depression is these people aren't, their cognitive bias is biased towards reality. They are more realistic. The more, like, people who are depressed are more realistic than people who are not depressed. We have baseline cognitive biases as human beings that make us think we're above average. That's statistically not true. The majority of people who believe they are above average are not above average, right? It's weird. So we have this cognitive bias. And in depression, that cognitive bias goes away and we are more in tune with reality. But even if it's true, the nature of our thinking can hold us back. And we get bogged down in trying to convince people will try to convince us that's not true. I don't say that that's not true. I say it is true. And I say, what is the utility of thinking that way? Where is that kind of thinking going to get you? And the reason that we think that way is because when there is a certain amount of thing that is bad in the world that we accurately represent, and we think in a negative way, it A, motivates us, it reduces our motivation. And as we become unmotivated, we stop moving out into the world. And as we stop moving out into the world, that negative thing does not hurt us. So this kind of thinking is a survival mechanism. It is a survival reflex. But just because it's a reflex doesn't mean that it is helpful. So our reflexes evolved to have us survive in certain conditions. And now some of our default programming on an evolutionary and mental level is not well suited for the world that we live in. Things like the appendix. Nowadays, the appendix causes more harm than good, right? But when we developed the appendix, it served a very important function, which is after a diarrheal illness, it repopulated our gut with healthy bacteria. I'm really curious whether we see more dysbiosis in people who have had appendectomies years down the road. Really curious. I think it still probably does something for us. But for a lot of people, all it does is get inflamed, burst, and cause sepsis. So we take it out. So in that same way, be careful about the way that you think. Notice your thoughts. And it's not about whether they're true or not. As you think in this pattern, and there's a great memberships lecture, I think it's one of the best ones we've ever done, on vasana. There's some of the stuff is in Dr. K's guide too. So quite technical. A vasana is a mental habit to really understand how your mind works. And if you think these thoughts, what impact does thinking in this way have on you? It's not about whether it's true or not. I don't care about whether it's true. What does it do to you? That's the important question. So Trump fascism is scaring me. I don't know what to do about it. Okay. We have influences in our life that shape the circumstances that we live in, right? So generally speaking, when there's a political leader who acts in a particular way that scares people, you've got a couple of basic choices, okay? The first thing to understand is that let's understand the nature of this person's words, actions, whatever are scary to me. So there are absolutely political leaders that will do things that will affect your life. Like this can happen in a huge way, right? So there's conscription, I think, going on in places like Russia and Ukraine. Here in the United States, like ICE is like deporting a lot of people. So there are absolutely things going on that will concretely affect your life. But I think the first thing that we need to understand is that there are things that are concretely affecting your life right now. And then there is a looming fear, right? So if we look at the world today, what I tend to see is that what messes people up the most. So if you're in the slice of people who are being directly affected, that's a different story, which we'll get to. But the majority of people in the world today are not being directly affected yet. The majority of people are getting this looming fear of uncertainty. And I don't know what to do if you think that Trump is doing something bad. Fair enough. Okay. So now the question becomes like, this is not about whether Trump is bad or Trump is good or about the world is moving in the right direction or the wrong direction. I love this question because this is exactly why we're doing the stream. In a world where things are falling apart around us, there are things moving in a dangerous direction. Are tariffs going to end up being high, or is it going to end up, or is there going to be a deal? Or is there not going to be a deal? Like no one knows, right? Like no one knows. And yet you have to live in this world where it becomes very hard to like know what to do. So there are two major things that I would start with. The first is recognize what you are receiving from your perception. So if we like really understand this, there's hopefully a video that we have coming out about this soon. What a lot of people don't realize is that perception is actually the root of motivation. We think about motivation as being emotional. We think about it as being, even to a certain degree, discipline, right? So, or we like substitute discipline for motivation. We try to have willpower. We try to have habits. There are all of these things that we try to think of as being involved with how we act and how we're motivated. But really, the root of most motivation is perception. I'll give you all a really simple example of this. So when I was in middle school, my friends and I would have crushes on like the girls in our class, right? So like I have a crush on this person, my friend has a crush on this person, maybe some girl has a crush on us. And do you end up asking that person out on a date or not? So it turns out that the number one thing that would alter your motivation on asking this person out or not is I elbow my friend. I'm like, hey, go ask her friend if she likes me. So I would send my agent, my spy, to go ask some other girl if the girl that I like likes me back. And if I get through the grapevine and answer that she likes me back, then it becomes really easy to ask her out. And if I get an answer that she doesn't like me back, or it's not clear, or she laughed, or was she embarrassed? Does she think I'm pathetic? Like, I don't know. So the way that we perceive the world determines our motivation, okay? And I think the biggest problem in the world right now is that we have lost control of our perception. So we have content algorithms, we have propaganda, right? So if we think about it, like think about the term propaganda. What is propaganda? Propaganda is bombarding someone's perception to alter their beliefs and control their behavior, right? Like there's a word. We know this. We know propaganda is effective. We absolutely know that if you shape a human being's perception, then their motivation to act will change. Advertisers know this too. They bombard your perceptions and then they induce your motivation. So if you're paralyzed and you don't know what to do, start by examining your perception. What are you consuming? And generally speaking, here's what happens in the brain. When we perceive a problem, and if the problem is big and affects us, what does the brain try to do? It tries to solve the problem, right? So if I see that my ceiling is leaking. I'm going to go upstairs and try to stop the leak. If my toilet is overflowing or my toilet is clogged, I'm going to try to plunge it. If I'm hungry, if I have a perception of hunger, I'm going to go eat something. So the brain very naturally, anytime we encounter a problem, it automatically starts to try to solve that problem. Now, the problem with this is that our brain was designed to perceive a certain scale of problem. And this is where I want y'all to understand that we evolved in for millions of years in the same environment that like apes evolved. And I want you to think about what is the nature of problems that apes deal with. Our brains are very similar, right? Our DNA is very similar. There's so much overlap. And so now what I'm seeing with a lot of people is the scale of problems they encounter, like Trump fascism, or Trump is doing this or whatever, some leader is doing whatever, it doesn't matter. Political beliefs, political party, like I'm not trying to say one is good or one is bad, like whatever, it doesn't matter. If you talk to conservatives, they'll say like, oh, like the liberals are destroying the world. And if you talk to liberals, they'll say the conservatives are destroying the world, right? Like that's what everyone says. The key thing though, is that the moment that we encounter these problems, our brain tries to problem solve it. And when our brain tries to problem solve it, turns out you can't control or even really influence a political leader in your country. And so then your brain gets stuck. And this is the biggest problem. If you look at like people today, right? What happens is everyone is hyper aware of problems and very few people have any idea what to do with them. And so our energy and our motivation and our problem solving apparatus are trying to take a bite out of a mountain. It's too big for us to consume, too big for us to tackle. And then we get stuck in this paralysis loop because everywhere you look, there's this problem, there's this problem, there's this problem, there's this problem. How do I solve this? 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 No one knows how to solve it. And so then you just get stuck doing absolutely nothing. And now here's the real problem. The moment that you get paralyzed, your brain gets paralyzed trying to solve problems that are unsolvable. All of your cognitive energy gets tied up in that. And then your actual life gets worse. And then as your actual life gets worse, then it magnifies the perception of all of the problems, right? So I see this a lot. I won't sort of be specific, but like, you know, there are certain classes of people who will blame their problems on something else. And then as all of their cognitive energy goes into like blaming their problems on this group of people, their actual life gets worse. They don't take a good example of this is like immigrants stealing my jobs. And if you're worried about immigrants stealing your jobs, maybe that does happen. There's absolutely competition and things like that. But generally speaking, as I demonize something that is macroeconomic and I waste all of my cognitive energy on that, I don't actually improve at my job. Right. So like maybe this is a bias on my part. I've never heard someone who is worried about immigrants stealing their jobs, who at the same time is super hardcore about acquiring certifications, improving their own work situation, trying to acquire skills. And maybe it's an issue of like selection bias. Maybe I just don't hang out with those people. I'm sure that there's some overlap between those two Venn diagrams. But there's like the hardcore LinkedIn, I'm going to like acquire these certifications and get better and get better and level up and level up and level up. And there are the people who are like the immigrants are stealing my jobs. These are like two tracks, right? It's like, which tree do you want to level up in? Which tree do you want to devote your time to? So what tends to happen is we start to get paralyzed and then our actual life gets worse. But it's not worse because of the thing that is paralyzing us, which is the big cognitive mistake that I think people make. Now, in some cases, absolutely, like you will be directly affected by political decisions of leaders in your country. Everyone will be affected on a macroeconomic level by decisions that political leaders make. And this is the real problem, is that as we get affected by those decisions, if we become paralyzed, our capacity to adapt gets hindered. So instead of rising to meet the challenges of my microscopic environment, I am going to feel paralyzed, not do anything. And as my life gets worse, my brain looks for an explanation. And so as my brain looks for an explanation, it looks at a macroscopic kind of force, right? So I see this a lot with people who struggle to date, like men who struggle to date. I've worked with a lot of these dudes and they blame feminism, right? And as they become more and more lonely, they blame feminism more and more and more. And they think feminism is the reason for this. Feminism is the reason for this. Many of them don't focus on developing their own skills and things like that, but many of them do. So there's another category here that we have to acknowledge. So in terms of if you're scared of Trump fascism, I'd say there's two things that you should do. The first, and this is really important as well, think about what you can do. So I had a patient once who had terminal cancer, and his family like would come in every day and they'd be like, he's not eating, he's not eating, he's not eating. They're like, he needs to keep his strength up, needs to keep his strength up. They would bring all of his favorite food, like lovely people, like really nice people. And it was like hard for me to explain to them, like, this dude is going to die in like a week or two, right? Like they weren't able to process that, like, keeping your strength up is like not it. There's no strength to like, we're done. Like, this is over, right? They were like, it was part of the grieving process. But human beings, the best way to feel better about a problem is to do something about it. Even if what you do is completely ineffective. If my uncle has metastatic cancer and I'm having trouble because I can't do anything about that, if I bring this person some food and they eat the food, then I feel better. I feel like I have done what I can about the problem. So here's the key mistake that people make. People think that in order to fix a problem that is messing up your life, you need to solve the problem. That's technically incorrect. You don't have to solve the problem. You need to act towards the problem. You need to try to do something. Psychologically, that does half the battle. So if we sort of think about, let's say I have a parent who's very, very toxic and narcissistic. I can't fix their narcissism, but acting in some way, either by setting boundaries or by taking a break from like leaving the house and like, I'm just going to go out and do my own thing for a couple of hours. Taking action alleviates the stress of the mind, always. And if you guys don't believe this, a really good example of this, taking any kind of action, if it's oriented towards the problem, it's good. But even taking other kinds of action can be good too. So if I don't know how to tackle this gigantic work project, even if I spend an hour cleaning, you will find that your mind is a lot calmer. Taking any kind of action can be helpful. So the first thing that I would recommend is if you are concerned about something politically in your country, you should get involved. So in the United States, write a letter to call your congressman or your senator's office, call them both and call them every day. You may think, what's the point of that? This is where like a lot of the reason these problems are growing and growing and growing is because people don't know how the political process actually works. People don't pay attention in government, right? We're now in a world where everyone who's like taking a government class or a civics class is just using ChatGPT to like get through the essay and try to like get through the test. No one is actually trying to learn in school. This is the biggest problem. You guys think that Trump fascism is a problem? There is an even bigger crisis looming, which is that we have a generation of people who is not learning anything. They're using ChatGPT to get grades. We have an educational system that is so messed up. And so people don't know how their government works. So I'll give you all an interesting tidbit about this. So in the United States, just about every week, every congressperson, congressman, congresswoman, senator, every week they receive a report from their staffers about how many people called and what issue they were concerned about. They don't get a big report about like, you know, what you said or what your points are. They just literally get a number tally of the number of phone calls they received and what the issue they're concerned about is. That actually alters the legislative representative's view on something. Now, you may wonder, why is this? It's because people who bother to call are people who bother to vote. And out of all of the people, like millennials through Gen Alpha, calling your legislative representative is something that very few people do. We don't do that. It doesn't make a difference. So the biggest scam that has been pulled in the United States is convincing people that their vote doesn't matter. Like, think about this for a second. Your vote is insignificant. Your vote is very significant. Do you vote in local elections? Do you vote for school board elections? Do you engage in the process of democracy and government? Generally speaking, the answer is no. What we do is watch TikTok. That's what we do. And like, that's a certain degree of political engagement, but there's also some really interesting research, not stuff that I know very well, can't pull it up off the top of my head because it's not science-based research. But I saw something really interesting that people who do fundraising find that there is an inverse relationship between donation and activity on social media. So when a human being likes or shares or subscribes to a piece of content that is related to an issue, in their brain, they feel like they've done their part. I supported the cause. I raised awareness. Great. Good job. Look at us raising awareness. I shared this video. I've done my part at making the world a better place. And I'm not saying that that isn't helpful in some way. It can be helpful to spread awareness. That's a good thing. But the moment that we do that, we alleviate the burden of actual action. So the more that people share, the less that they donate. There are two camps. So even when it comes to politics, there are people who participate in politics and there are people who bitch about politics. Those are the two options. Which one do you fall into? And if this sounds harsh or not compassionate, I mean, this is like literally what I'm saying, right? Like, I know that this sounds harsh, but literally, what is your involvement in the process? Decisions get made by those who show up. Elected officials get elected based on people who show up. Like, literally, that's how a democracy works. Now, you can argue that there's problems with our democracy. Maybe there's cheating in our democracy. Like, all of those possibilities could be there, right? But if you're thinking about what to do, it's like all of that stuff could be true or it could not be true. We don't know if elections are rigged or not rigged, I think, in this country. I don't know. And even if they're like, so then like, if, even if you think about it, even if you believe elections are rigged, there's a chance that you're wrong. But if you choose to stay home and you're wrong, because I know this sounds insane, I don't know how much direct evidence that you have that elections are rigged. And if your evidence is, I watch a bunch of TikToks about how elections are rigged, like, that's not evidence. Y'all with me? Like, does that make sense? There's a gap there. So this is where our perception, once again, that we are powerless in the world is what creates our powerlessness in the world. And this is very something that's very clinical too. So when I work with people who are in abusive relationships, the first thing that an abuser does is convinces the victim of abuse that they're powerless. The first step that they do, because the moment that I can convince you that you are powerless, that's when you actually become powerless. The difference between a failure and a setback is whether you choose to give up. So the first thing that I would say is if you're concerned about something politically in your country, get involved in the way that feels right to you. Do something about it. Depending on where you are, you may want to protest. If you protest in some places, that's not safe to do. So maybe that's not a good idea. If you're in a democracy, you should register to vote. You should go vote. You should try talking to your elected representatives. Tell them, hey, like, this is something that's really bothering me. There are things that you can do. Now, you may say, but Dr. K, that doesn't have an effect. Notice that perception and the effect of that perception. Second psychological thing that we're taking advantage of is we're doing something. So remember, the human body and mind don't wear out, they rust. So when we stop doing stuff, we become deconditioned, right? The more I take the elevator, the harder it is to use the stairs. The more inactive I become, the more slothful I become in life, the harder it's going to be to act. So take some kind of action politically, whether it matters or doesn't matter, like, I don't know. And frankly, you don't either. Right. If you think, you know, like, I don't, maybe you're, if you're like a political expert who spent 30 years in politics and knows really how politics works, then you can tell me I'm wrong. But if you're like a 26-year-old person who's consuming content on the internet and sitting on Twitch and YouTube and watching some random ass live streamer talk to you about politics when they're a psychiatrist, if this is where you're getting your information, like, what the hell do you know? Right. Like, you with me? Now, second thing, this is important too, is that in addition to the political stuff, you should think about what you can do in your life. Now, despite whatever is happening, and you should be politically active, I think that's good. The other thing is that the problems that you face in your life are concrete and in front of you. And I would say start by solving those problems. So what I tend to, like, when I work with people who are, like, incels, let's say, right? They're worried about these, like, macroscopic forces, like feminism and dating. And those things are legitimately, I'm not saying feminism is bad, but, like, dating is legitimately a mess. Loneliness is legitimately a mess. There are absolutely systemic forces which are making your life hard. But those systemic forces don't mean that there is no action that you can take. And the whole problem with our perception right now is that our brain gets so caught up in trying to grapple with things that are outside of our control that we start to become inactive. So when you look at your life, what I would strongly recommend is that you try to turn yourself into the best person possible to face and deal with whatever is coming down the road. Is there a scary time coming down the road? Absolutely. Is it going to get worse before it gets better? Absolutely. Is it going to continue to get worse and maybe get never get better? Who knows? But that is the reality of the world that we live in. Now the question is, for this mess that is coming down the pipeline, who is going to face it? What is going to be the quality, capability, and character of the person who is going to face it? And that is what I think you should focus on. If you're going to end up getting wiped anyway, that's fine. You should still level up. And the reason that I believe in this is because, so you guys think like, oh my God, these problems are unsolvable. Respectfully, I think you're right, maybe, and I don't care. So a few years ago, I was a psychiatrist practicing in my office. And I was helping maybe 30 to 50 people a week. I was working at a rehab, occasionally working in a hospital, in an emergency room, in my office. I was grinding in three different settings. And I'm one person. And then I started streaming on the internet. And what difference can one person make, right? Is it insignificant? Is it significant? And now, then something cool happened. I started to make a small difference. I started to affect 30 to 50 to 60 people, maybe 100 people, maybe hopefully I helped them in some way. And then there were some awesome people who said, hey, and I was like, hey, like, I don't know how to do this. Is there anyone who can help? And y'all know who you are, about four or five people from the original, like the earliest days of Healthy Gamer, when we had about 20 to 30 average concurrence, four or five of random people from chat said, we will help you. And those people became our first employees at Healthy Gamer. We started with their help. We started to make a little bit of money, and then we started to be able to pay them. And now we pay them their full-time employees. And then these tiny little people who are just as tiny as I am, all these tiny little people that felt like they were insignificant started to become significant. They started to build things. We have devs in our audience who started to build our platform. We have the person who made the first emotes on our channel is now our partnerships manager. She's amazing. One of our earliest Twitch chatters is now like manages our community. So now if we look at what Healthy Gamer is capable of accomplishing, I started out, I do the same thing that I did 5 years ago. I haven't changed. I affected 30 people. That hasn't changed. What changed is the people who came after, the people who supported me, the people who amplified this, the people who designed this little logo in the bottom of the screen, the people who built this set, the people who produced a schedule that we stick to, the people that configured this camera. No snowflake thinks it's responsible for the avalanche. And yet the impact that we've made is because insignificant people showed up and did the best that they could. And when you take a pile of insignificance, it becomes really powerful. So don't underestimate what you're capable of and try to turn yourself into the best person possible to face what is coming. Because if you waste all your time just worrying about what's coming, feeling paralyzed by what's coming, at least turn yourself into the best possible instrument. Because then when what comes down the pipeline comes, and we don't know if it's coming, we don't know if it's not coming, I have no idea. Is it going to screw you? Is war coming? Is death coming? Like, I don't know, right? But when death comes for you, are you going to have someone who has good gum health because you floss every day? That's what you should focus on. And when you say, oh my God, it doesn't matter, that I respectfully disagree with. I don't know how it matters. It feels like if there's a missile coming your way and you're busy flossing, it may feel really insignificant. And there's something that feels really powerful about that to me. The person who continues to floss when there are bombs raining down, is there's something really powerful about that. I don't know what. I don't know how. I think maybe it's karmic. If y'all have questions about it, maybe we can figure it out together. But there are a lot of insignificant things that we do that feel insignificant at the time and then end up being worth so much more. The whole point is that you don't know because things are uncertain. And since you don't know what's going to be helpful and you don't know what's not going to be helpful. And then the question becomes, how do I invest my time? Invest it in yourself. Become physically healthy, become mentally strong, become financially secure, develop your social support network. All of those things, whether there's war or there's not war, the more that you level up that stuff, the better off you will be. So I work really hard to prepare myself for what is coming. That's how I spend my days now, preparing for what's coming. And like, if you don't know what else to do, just prepare. Hey, y'all, hope you enjoyed today's video. We talk about a bunch of topics like this on the channel, so be sure to subscribe for more. If you're already subscribed, GG, and we'll see you in chat.